I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. We have a special show this morning for the very first Two Jewish Show of 2020, the year in review. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Shinshinim, our young representatives of Israel, Shai Friedwald and Danielle Levy, and our Mevina on Israel, Imbal Shtivi. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom. This morning we have a unique show on 2 Jewish in which we'll review the past secular year, 2019, as we embrace the new one, 2020. Now, I know everyone else had their end-of-the-year shows just before New Year's, and it may appear a little gauche to have waited until January to look back on 2019. But, you see, it was Hanukkah during the last two editions of 2 Jewish. The last two shows fell just before the first night and then during the seventh day of that great festival of lights and latkes and Maccabees and dreidels, and we just couldn't bear to tear ourselves away from the great positive messages of rededication, courage, historical drama, and Jewish joy in order to look back on a pretty tough year. In addition, so much was going on in the insane news of the past 2 weeks. Fatal attacks on Jews in a Jersey City delicatessen and market, and near-fatal attacks at a Hanukkah celebration in Muncie, New York, crazy statements by highly placed people that were clearly and weirdly anti-Semitic, the seemingly endless stalemate in Israeli politics that, trying to look back on the last year, well, it might have seemed a little out of touch. But 2019 was a complex and troubling time for Jews all around the world, and we need to reflect on the central stories of these last 12 months. In the view of 2 Jewish, there were just three primary stories in the Jewish world last year. The most important of these had to do with the spiking of violent anti-Semitism. The next two were important stories and are closely related and more easily addressed, so we'll start with those. They are Israel's struggle to form a permanent government with a prime minister the country can support, and current long-term Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu's protracted corruption investigation, including his indictment in three separate cases. Netanyahu's corruption cases are proceeding slowly towards trial. He seems quite likely to be convicted on at least two of these three charges, quite possibly all three. Now, in the grand scheme of government corruption worldwide, what Bibi is accused of seems pretty tame indeed. For example, he has not blackmailed foreign governments in order to damage his political opponents, nor has he profited to the tune of millions of dollars by having Israeli officials or international visitors stay in hotels or resorts he owns. He has apparently accepted cognac and cigars, and appears to have used his influence to help media moguls who support him get favorable licenses in exchange for positive coverage. Compared to what even other democratically elected officials of other supposedly civilized countries have done and are doing, Bibi Netanyahu has not exactly committed malfeasance on the order of what unnamed world leaders seem to be doing regularly. It certainly doesn't approach the corruption of what, say, Ehud Olmert did as Israeli prime minister. Possibly it is no worse or very different from what Ariel Sharon may have done, or even the sainted Yitzhak Rabin. But after 10 years, Israelis seem to have had enough of Bibi's act, and the political leaders of other parties in the Jewish state refuse to build a coalition with him as prime minister. That's clear. So Israel has now held two national elections, and it will hold another one shortly, all within less than a year. And the results have been, for the first time in the 72 years of Israel's existence, totally and completely inconclusive. In spite of the most elaborate efforts of first Netanyahu and then his political opponent Benny Gantz, no one could form a government with enough members of Knesset to actually govern. While Netanyahu has held control of Likud, too many other political leaders refused to work with a man under triple indictment as the incoming prime minister to maintain him in office. That means Israel's become a vivid illustration of what Winston Churchill once said, Democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the others that have been tried. We're going to see that aphorism tried yet again this year in Israel. Sadly, the biggest story of 2019 was the rise of violent anti-Semitism around the world, but particularly right here in the United States. The emergence of violent anti-Semitism as a widespread American scourge can leave no Jews with warm thoughts about the year just passed. Until October 2018, a mere 14 months ago, there had never been a fatal attack on a synagogue in the United States. Now there have been two such atrocities. Another planned attack was averted by authorities, while a kosher market in Delhi and a Hanukkah celebration at a rabbi's home were both scenes of such attacks in the past 2 weeks. We will address this ongoing, developing, painful, tragic, and profoundly disturbing story when we come back in a few moments here on Too Jewish. But first, to play us in on this first Too Jewish show of 2020, here's a wonderful Rami Kleinstein song, past guest of Too Jewish, called Matanot Ktanot, Small Gifts, sung by the boy-singer duo known as Tzemed Lemed. The words are appropriate as we review a year of challenge. Someone sent me little gifts, fragments of intention, circles of faith, little gifts, like the power to accept what is and what isn't. What more can you ask for? For you chose us and sanctified us. Blessed are you, God, sanctifier of the Sabbath.
זד יום שישי נושם את האוויר האור והצל משחקים שוב תופסת השולחן ערוך תמונות ילדות על הקיר שיירות לבנות חוזרות מבית כנסת והריח הזה ששורט לי את הלב מתגנב מתגנב ופתח דלתות אלו שקטן אל אותו שישן שעובר אצלנו במשך דורות מתנות קטנות מי שהוא שלח לי מתנות קטנות בסיסים של כוונה עיגולים של אמונה
That was Tzemed Lemed singing Rami Kleinstein's song Matanot Ktanot. On this unique year-in-review show on Too Jewish, we'll return to our retrospective on that very complicated year, 2019. Find out where we're going with all of this and what 2020 may promise when we return in a moment on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Jerry Herman passed away last week, the great composer and lyricist of iconic hit musicals.
Hello, Dolly. This is Louis Dolly. Finally glad to have you back where you belong. You looking swell, Dolly. I can't tell, Dolly. You keep growing, you're still growing, you're still going strong. I feel the room swaying and the band is playing. One of our old favorite tunes from way back when. So take a rap, fellas, but then do an empty lap, fella. Darling, never go my way again.
Jerry Herman's biggest Broadway show didn't start out being called Hello, Dolly. The musical hadn't yet made it to Broadway when jazz great Louis Armstrong recorded his version of one song. The singer's gravelly voice take on Hello, Dolly turned it from a swaying, gay 90s-style tune that Herman envisioned into a phenomenal toe-tapping hit, inspiring producers to slap that name across the marquee. It reached Broadway in early 1964, and the show stayed there for a record-breaking 2,844 performances. What had been called Dolly, a damned exasperating woman, would become the biggest in a string of hits for Jerry Herman. The versatile composer and lyricist who also wrote Mame, Milk and Honey, and years later La Cage aux Folles, in a career that brought him worldwide renown, repeated revivals, 2 Tonys, and 2 Grammy Awards. Herman died last week at the age of 88. Known for upbeat, deceptively simple lyrics and catchy tunes, Jerry Herman was a wunderkind of the golden era of musical theater on Broadway in the 60s and 70s. He wrote songs celebrating the resilience of the human spirit, centered on characters like Dolly Levi, the indomitable matchmaker at the heart of Hello, Dolly, and Mame Dennis, the bohemian aunt of Mame. His music is emotionally very accessible, joyous and positive kind of music. His shows captured the pulse of the public at the time, said Miles Kruger, president of the Institute of the American Musical. Although critics sometimes called his music too light, especially as Broadway taste turned to more complex themes, Herman's biggest hits have proved remarkably enduring. His goal was simple. "What I really want," he said, "is to be an entertainer, to entertain masses of people." He did. His work featured showstoppers like the title songs of Dolly and Mame and the defiant I Am What I Am and La Cage aux Folles. He also was known for lyrics expanding the roles of his larger-than-life female characters. He wrote for his mother, Dolly star Carol Channing, a close friend said. "He's written the most marvelous women's parts for musicals that anyone ever wrote because he wrote them for someone he loved dearly, his mom." Of course, Jerry Herman was Jewish. Gerald Sheldon Herman, an only child, was born in New York City, July 10, 1931. He grew up in Jersey City, New Jersey. His mother, Ruth Sachs, taught piano and had a music radio program. His father, Harry Herman, taught phys ed, and with his wife ran a summer camp that became a musical training ground for their son, Jerry. After he learned to play piano at the age of 5, the family spent evenings playing show tunes. Harry on sax, Ruth on accordion. They took in Broadway shows and one when he was 14 hit young Jerry like a jolt. It was Annie Get Your Gun, featuring the powerful voice of Ethel Merman. He started writing music, thinking about it as a hobby. But his mother, Ruth, urged her skeptical son to waste a half hour of your life. She arranged for him to meet Broadway icon Frank Lesser, composer and lyricist of Guys and Dolls, also Jewish, of course. Improbably, Lesser encouraged the young man, saying he thought he could be a success with his music. "It was like a door opening. It started everything moving in my life," Herman said. He studied theater at the University of Miami, getting a BA in 1953. And the next year, using songs he wrote in college, he staged his first off-Broadway revue, I Feel Wonderful. His first modest Broadway success came in 1961. It was Milk and Honey, a musical about American widows touring the young state of Israel. It ran for 543 performances. Jerry Herman was soon summoned to a meeting with renowned Broadway producer David Merrick, who needed a composer and lyricist for a musical based on The Matchmaker, a Thornton Wilder play. Herman was hired for what would become Hello, Dolly after he delivered 4 songs to Merrick 3 days later, including the popular Put On Your Sunday Clothes.
Put on your Sunday clothes, there's lots of world out there. Get out the brilliantine and dime cigars. We're gonna find adventure in the evening air. Girls in white in a perfume night with the lights as bright as the stars. Put on your Sunday clothes, we're gonna ride through town in one of those new horse-drawn open cars. We'll see the shows at Delmonico's, and we'll close the town in a whirl, and we won't come home until we've kissed a girl.
When it opened on Broadway in 64, Hello, Dolly was a sensation. It ran for 7 years, won 10 Tony Awards, including composer and lyricist for Herman, who also won a Grammy for the title song. Other stars, including Pearl Bailey, followed Channing in her signature role. 1969, Barbara Streisand starred in the Oscar-winning film. Next for Herman was Mame in 66, starring Angela Lansbury as the irrepressible title character who takes in her brother's orphaned son. Based on the novel Auntie Mame by Patrick Dennis, the show was a smash. It won 3 Tonys, ran for 1,500 performances, and a cast recording brought Jerry Herman a Grammy for original score. Other Broadway productions followed, Dear World, Mac and Mabel, which Herman called his favorite, and The Grand Tour in 1979, but all were commercial flops. Le Cage aux Folles put him back on top. Based on a French film comedy, the 1983 musical was a humorous but touching love story with a gay couple and transvesticism at its heart. Herman's songs were credited with helping mainstream audiences care about gay characters, a daring notion. Playing against a backdrop of the growing AIDS crisis, his song I Am What I Am, sung by one character after a painful passing rejection by his partner's son, became an anthem of gay pride.
I am what I am. I don't want praise. I don't want pity. I bang my own drum. Some think it's noise. I think it's pretty. Each feather and each spangle, why not try to see things from a different angle? Your life is a sham till you can shout out loud, I am what I am.
Le Cage won 6 Tonys, including original score for Herman. It played for more than 4 years. With that success, he became the first composer-lyricist to score more than 1,500 performances each for his 3 major hits. AIDS, which decimated the supporting cast of Le Cage aux Folles, would directly touch the life of Herman, who was openly gay in the late 80s. He was diagnosed with HIV and lost his longtime partner, Martin Finkelstein, to AIDS. In later years, Jerry Herman wrote the score for a 1996 TV musical, Mrs. Santa Claus, took part in reviews of his music and checked on revivals of his many shows. In 2010, he was honored at the Kennedy Center. Reflecting at one point on the sweep of his life, he spoke of it in terms familiar for the man who wrote Before the Parade Passes By. It was a very long, colorful parade, he said, with lots of balloons and banners and confetti.
Before the parade passes by, I've got to go and taste Saturday's high life. Before the parade passes by, I've got to get some life back into my life. I'm ready to move out in front. I've had enough of just passing my life. With the rest of them, with the best of them, I can hold my head up high. For I've got to go again. I've got to try again. I want to feel my heart coming alive again. Before the parade passes by.
A great of the American musical theater, Jerry Herman is gone, but his words and music will live on in revivals as long as there are musicals. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this winter. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has a vibrant community striving every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson in the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha has moved into larger quarters in our new synagogue location, 2270 West Ina Road, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us this Friday night at 2270 West Ina Road, just west of La Cholla, in our new location at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning Torah studies at 9 a.m., followed by Shabbat morning services at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. The new synagogue, 2270 West Ina Road, west of La Cholla, on the north side of Ina, just at the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. We aren't in the mall, but on the south side in our own building, and we'll be there for a while. Join us in 2020 at Ina, west of La Cholla. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes program, Bar Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, and high school program, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, and, of course, for all of our Shabbat and other services, go to www.BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, www.BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest-growing Jewish synagogue community in southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people, an individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort? As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, TOOJewishRadio.com. Streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And happy secular New Year. We can still say that.
Right.
There are some really interesting films out now and recently over the last month or so that have Holocaust elements or are closely related to the Holocaust. I think of Jojo Rabbit. You mentioned The Two Popes, the Terrence Malick film also. You know, there's always Holocaust films coming out, but very interesting ones this time with kind of different takes on things.
Right. And one might think, and certain cynics have said, everything there is to say about the Holocaust has already been said.
Yeah.
However, and I think it's an important however, there are still original perspectives and aspects of the Holocaust that have not been well covered by other movies. And there's also the concern lest they forget. It's a story worth retelling, even if it's not from an original perspective. And there's quite a few movies out right now, as we speak, which touch either directly or indirectly on the Holocaust. And one which touches on a troubling question for our own society, which is social inequality, income inequality, and how hard life can be for people who are at the lower end of the economic scale. So let's start with Jojo Rabbit, because that seemed to be the film you were most interested in. It certainly has some big name stars, Sam Rockwell, Scarlett Johansson. Unfortunately, neither one does a very good job of faking a German accent.
Yeah, their German accents weren't great, but their performances were good otherwise, you know.
Yes. What I will say about that film is that in the first 10 or 15 minutes, I was sorely tempted to walk out, which I never do in movies. But first few minutes, it really seems to be trivializing the Holocaust and making it into a comedy, because the director...
He's a comedic director, but he's an interesting guy. He's from New Zealand. His mother's Jewish. He's a very unusual guy, and he plays Hitler in the film.
Right, and so halakhically, he's Jewish.
Yeah, right.
So luckily, I read enough reviews to know that I should stay and that the film becomes more and more serious as you go through it.
Right.
And as the layers of the onion around each character are peeled off.
Right.
And they're... true selves are revealed, it becomes a very serious film, and a very moving film, in fact, with surprising twists and turns. And the end is like you just want to stand up and cheer. So I recommend the film, but encourage people not to rush to judgment in the first 20 minutes or so.
You know, I saw it with a group of congregants. You know, I asked if anybody wanted to see it because it was just out. And there were two responses. People either hated it or loved it. And there were couples where the wife loved it and the husband hated it. You know, it was like there was no in between. I was kind of in between. I liked it a lot, but I didn't, you know, I didn't think it was Life is Beautiful, for example, another film that was controversial because a few years back.
Right.
You know, it
won a lot of awards.
Yeah, it was a great film. But it also a fascinating, you know, take on turning it into a game somehow to survive. This wasn't like that. It wasn't at that level. But really good, really interesting, and I think emotionally worth seeing, absolutely.
Yeah, and definitely worth staying till the end.
Yeah, don't walk out too early.
Right.
We will continue this survey of interesting recent films next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivinan Israel, Inbal Shtivi, head of the Weintraub Israel Center, and our Shlicha for Israel. Boker Tov, Inbal.
Boker Nice to be here. Nice to talk to you.
Always nice to talk to you. Israeli TV has become a hot thing on Netflix, Amazon Prime, all around America. You hear, at least in the Jewish community, but not just in the Jewish community, about shows like Fauda and Shtisel and on. There's like five Israeli shows that are now successfully transported across the Atlantic and the Mediterranean, for that matter. Why do you think, as an Israeli who's now been in America for a while, why do you think these shows are speaking to American audiences and American Jewish audiences in this way?
Many times the creators of different television shows are coming from specific backgrounds and have deep, deep, deep understanding of what's going on in those communities or in those events. Let's say Fauda, let's say Shtisel, let's say Our Boys, let's say others. They have a profound understanding of the processes. And that is in general. I think that it's true for Israeli TV series, but it's also true for other TV series coming from other places.
So watching, it's sort of the extra depth that you can get because, you know,
it's the extra depth.
Because Israeli society is not so obvious to people who aren't from there. The pressures, the experiences, you need a little time and a little bit of consistency to kind of dig in. So maybe when you stream these shows, you get more of Israel than you could get before.
Yeah. Given the limitations of this media, of this medium, that is a TV series that needs to, you know, to tell a story, and the narrative should go on and on. Let's say Shtisel, or let's say Fauda. Of course, the events are more condensed than in reality, and there is a story there that might not have been might not be true per se, but the story itself and the surroundings. I think one of the reasons Stiesel, for example, is so appealing to audiences throughout the world is that because it gives a sneak peek, much more than a sneak. Yeah, it's a deep insight towards the life.
You know, it's funny because although Fauda and Stiesel are so different, Fauda takes you into the unit itself and you see how these guys train for these secret missions into Gaza or the West Bank and the coordination and everything. And in Stiesel, you're seeing the interior life of an Orthodox world, an ultra-Orthodox world that's not accessible even to, you know, Jewish Israelis.
To regular,
Chiloni Israelis. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Inbal, thanks so much. We will talk much more next week.
Thank you. Have a great week. Bye-bye. Thank you.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. David is telling a new joke to Yossi. Yitzchak and Chaim were talking one day, and Yossi interrupts him. Always with the Jewish jokes. Give it a rest. Why do your jokes always have to be about Jews? Enough. Just change the names to some other ethnic group for once. Will you, David? So David starts again. Hashimoto and Suzuki were talking one day at their nephew's bar mitzvah. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. We welcome our Shin Shinim, our young representatives of Israel, Daniel Levy and Shai Friedwald from the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
And Shana Tova Lachilonim. I don't know the right word for secular Happy New Year. You guys have had the opportunity to interact with Americans your age, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds. What's the difference? What differences do you see between yourselves, Israelis, and the Israelis you know back home or your age, of course? You know, you guys just had graduated high school when you moved here. And the Americans you see that are in the same age range.
I would say the first thing about Israelis is that we just dare more. Like, we have this courage that no one can explain. I mean, it's crazy to think we sit with a few students once a week, and it's, I have to be honest, I'm losing my Israelism once in a while because I see their reality and they're like studying for finals and I'm just thinking about where I'm going to serve for the next 3 years in the army. I mean, it's crazy. And
it's very, very different.
Absolutely. And as long as I'm here, I'm just like starting to like be skeptical and all of that. I'm like, I know for like 18 years that I'm going to go to the army, but now I was like, I don't want to go to the army. I want to study, but like, do I want to study? I mean, like, because that's just like the head I'm getting into, but I'm here in America, but like, I know that I want to serve. I know that's what makes me proud and that's what I've been like raised for. But it's just like hard to think like that when you're just like surrounded by these students that all they do is study and party and that's pretty much it.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them work, you know, to
be
fair.
Of course, yeah,
but,
no. They work and they
but it's
work
not
hard.
The same as
it's
going through basic training and then getting stationed somewhere or being in a particular unit for advanced training or whatever. Shai, how about you?
As Daniel said, like, we officially meet with them once a week at the Hillel at the university.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. They study and they talk about their classes and their tests every time. But also when we were at high school, we didn't talk just school every time. Like a little bit politics, that person, a little bit sports, and show some interest in something. And maybe it's the kind of protectiveness that their parents gave them since they were little kids. They're not open-minded to everything. Every new thing seems to them like, oh my God, is that real? Does it even happen? For example, if they want to go to Birthright, so some of them just, they give them the opportunity to go to Birthright for 10 days, free trip to Israel, all over Israel,
right,
with their friends. I have tests, I have exams. I don't know if I
yeah, it's kind of amazing that some kids don't take advantage of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
my son was just on Birthright in December.
Right.
Not that he hadn't been to Israel already, and but still, now he gets to go with
with friends and with family. Yeah, exactly. More loose.
It's a very different experience.
Really different experience.
Yeah.
I want to connect to that and say, so in Israel, I think it's so crazy to think. In Israel, it's so popular, the year of service in Gatton in the past few years.
Yeah, the Shnat Shivrut.
Yeah, Shnat
Shivrut.
Exactly.
Right? Yep.
And people actually get, like kids our age actually get said no because there's just not enough places for them to volunteer, which I think is crazy. I mean,
it
so many
crazy.
Kids want to volunteer and there's just not enough place for them.
Right.
I mean, like they have actually to get a no. And here, if to think, even bring to mind to go to a gap year, it's like, okay, something has gotten into you. You're crazy. I mean, like, I don't understand why people see it as something so forbidden. I mean, we go through service for, like, at least, like, 2 years, and we add another year of service. I mean, we live life. I feel like that's something that Americans, you have to just, like, wake up of and just, like, realize that there's so much more and out of just, like, the studying and starting school and actually, like, Army is starting our life for us. I mean,
right.
It's something that no one else gets to experience.
It's an extraordinary difference.
Yeah.
And I don't think that American Jews don't really understand that distinction.
Nope. Absolutely not.
And you probably can't unless you've lived it.
You just think that it takes 1 year from your life.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely not taking. It's
but
giving
it's
you
giving
one
you
more.
So you guys have clearly had an incredible experience, and you've shared so much of that with us. Thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
Toda rabba. Bye-bye.
And now a word of Torah. This week we complete the story of Joseph and his great father Jacob, known as Israel as well, with the final Torah portion in the book of Genesis, Vayechi. It begins with a description of the death of Jacob, and perhaps even more importantly, the final blessings that Jacob gives to his many sons. But one of the most interesting aspects of this section is a brief episode in which Joseph, who knows that his father is dying, brings his own two sons, Jacob's grandsons Ephraim and Manasseh, to him for a blessing. In keeping with an ongoing theme in Genesis, Jacob blesses the younger son Ephraim before the older son Manasseh. When Joseph tries to correct his father, Jacob assures him that this blessing order is intentional. Both boys will father great tribes, but the younger will exceed the older in accomplishment. We still use this blessing each and every Friday night when we bless our sons today, both in temple and at home. In the Bible, we always expect the older child to succeed at a greater level than the younger to receive a bonus for being firstborn, but repeatedly throughout Genesis and even in Exodus, the younger child ends up excelling the older, receiving a greater portion of the inheritance. It's as if there is a clear message here. God has a plan that goes beyond the conventions of human society. As Paul Simon once sang, God only knows, God makes his plan, the information unavailable to the mortal man. For us, this consistent reversal of the traditional roles teaches a different lesson. In the negative formulation, Shakespeare had Caesar say, "The fault, dear Brutus, lies not in our stars, but in ourselves." That is, we can't attribute our own failures to our birth order, or our horoscope, or even our parents. Life happens, but how we respond to it is up to us, not to our birth order. What we can do is control our own actions and our own choices. We each have the ability to shape our own destinies. Like Ephraim, or like Joseph himself, or his own father Jacob, we may be born into less favor and fortune than others, but we can make our own way to success and goodness, and to God, if we work and care, and continue to seek holiness. We'll continue with a deep dive into the most important issue of the year that just passed, 2019, during this special 2020 edition of Too Jewish, on this first Sunday of the new decade.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The U.S., German, and Israeli ambassadors in Warsaw weighed in last week against claims by Russian President Vladimir Putin that Poland bears part of the blame for the outbreak of World War II. Dear President Putin, Hitler and Stalin colluded to start World War II. That is a fact. Poland was a victim in this horrible conflict, Ambassador Georgette Mosbacher said on Twitter in both English and Polish. The Russian embassy countered with a snarky tweet saying, "Dear Ambassador, do you really think that you know more about history any more than you do about diplomacy?" World War II started September 1, 1939, when Nazi German troops invaded Poland. 2 weeks later, the Soviet Red Army also attacked and battled Poland from the east, in what Poles still refer to as a stab in the back. Days earlier, Germany and Russia had signed a pact with a secret protocol to carve up Poland and the Baltic states between themselves. Some 6 million Poles, including 2 million Polish Jews, lost their lives during the entirety of World War II. Recently, Tsar Vladimir I, President Putin, has argued that collusion between Western powers and Adolf Hitler paved the way for World War II. He also cast Poland as an anti-Semitic country that welcomed Hitler's plans to destroy Europe's Jews. German Ambassador Rolf Nickel and Israeli Ambassador Alexander Ben Zvi took a stand to blame the war's outbreak accurately on the August 1939 Nazi-Soviet-Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. Polish historian Mariusz Wolos says that Putin is trying to create discord between Poland and the U.S. and the international Jewish diaspora. No surprise. Putin is trying to erase Stalin's alliance with Hitler from history, apparently. British historian Roger Morehouse said that Putin's words provoked a much better popular understanding of the pact's true nefarious nature and significance. Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki protested Putin's comments, saying that they are deliberate lies, arguing Putin is trying to deflect attention from recent political failures by Russia. Poland did not invite Putin to international ceremony September 1st in Warsaw, marking the 80th anniversary of World War II's outbreak. He is also not going to attend the January 27th observances of the liberation of the Auschwitz-Birkenau death camp Nazi Germany operated in occupied Poland. That's now International Holocaust Day. Relations between Russia and Poland have been tense ever since Poland threw off Moscow-controlled communist rule 30 years ago, began moving closer to the West. Poland has joined NATO and the European Union and cultivated a close alliance with the United States. Poland has also been making efforts to reduce its dependence on Russian gas and oil and has vocally opposed a major Russian-German gas pipeline now under construction, transporting Russian gas to Western Europe, bypassing Poland and Ukraine. In New York, federal prosecutors filed hate crime charges against the 38-year-old man who stabbed five people with a machete at a Hanukkah celebration in the New York City suburb of Muncie last week. At the Greenwood Lake, New York home of suspect Grafton Thomas, investigators recovered journals which had anti-Semitic sentiments, including references to Hitler and Nazi culture, on the same page as drawings of a Star of David and a swastika. The day of the machete attack, Thomas's phone was allegedly used to access an article titled, "New York City Increases Police Presence in Jewish Neighborhoods After Possible Anti-Semitic Attacks. Here's What to Know." On Thomas's phone were searches including, "Why did Hitler hate the Jews?" Thomas' family has denounced the crime and said he has no ties to any hate groups. Thomas has a long history of mental illness and hospitalization, the family said in a statement. He has no history of like violent acts, no convictions for any crime. He has no known history of anti-Semitism. He was raised in a home which embraced and respected all religions and races. He is not a member of any hate groups. Defense attorney Michael Sussman, who is Jewish, stressed Thomas's severe psychiatric issues and said a psychological evaluation should be conducted immediately. Sussman said Thomas had voices in his head, which is not unusual for people suffering from his level of psychosis. He seemed to indicate there was a direction he was following that evening, Sussman said. His explanations were not terribly coherent. Thomas' family added, "We believe the actions of which he is accused, if committed by him, tragically reflect profound mental illness." There were about 100 people at Rabbi Chaim Rotenberg's Muncie, New York home at the time of the attack on the seventh night of Hanukkah. The rabbi's home is attached to the ultra-Orthodox Hasidic Jewish Congregation Synagogue. He was hosting a ceremony lighting the candles of that night when Thomas ran in, swinging a huge knife. Five people were hurt, including one man who was in critical condition with a skull fracture. One person suffered a severed finger. Joseph Gluck, a shamus at the synagogue, said he was sitting in the dining room with 40 to 50 people when the intruder barged in wearing a hoodie and a scarf, covering all of his face except his eyes. Thomas said to the victims, "No one is leaving," took out a machete and started stabbing and slashing people, according to the federal complaint. In very different news, also from New York, David Stern, the highly successful and innovative longtime commissioner of the National Basketball Association, died last week from a brain hemorrhage he had suffered in mid-December. Stern was just 77 years old. David Stern will go down as one of the greatest commissioners in the history of all sports. May his memory be a blessing. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. This past year, 2019, saw the distressing development of a story we've been following with trepidation for over 3 years. The rise of anti-Semitism here in America. The return of this cancer to a country which has, throughout its history, experienced only a relatively minor infection of this deviant disease of Europe and other parts of the world. While we here at Two Jewish have been seriously concerned with the rise of anti-Semitism on college campuses for some years, and with anti-Zionism being used as a cover for virulent anti-Semitism on the left, the past few years have seen a dramatic rise in violent anti-Semitism on the right, in the lunatic fringes of society, and on the internet. We can no longer ignore it or pretend it will fade away or go back to hiding under the rocks it crawled out from in recent years. When I began Two Jewish over 17 years ago, my second guest was Professor Leonard Dinnerstein of blessed memory, author of what was then the most important book on the subject, entitled Anti-Semitism in America. Len Dinnerstein spoke about the decline of anti-Semitism. His principal thesis was that Jews had never been more at home in America than we were back then in 2002. When a caller, we took audience calls in those early shows, asked Dinnerstein about rising Muslim anti-Semitism in the U.S. and around the world, he was dismissive of it. Jews had ascended to extraordinarily high places in America. Being Jewish was no disability here anymore. In fact, we were in greater danger of being loved out of our unique existence as a separate people, included in all kinds of previously restricted organizations sought after as desirable marriage partners by non-Jews throughout the country. Back then, he was right. Anti-Semitism existed in America, but it was fading in those places where it wasn't already extinct. And being an anti-Semite meant social exclusion from civilized circles for the very first time in American history. Now, jump in a time machine, travel 17 years forward to the year we just completed, 2019. Realize that the first fatal attack in American history on a synagogue at prayer took place in October 2018, and the second took place in April 2019, and you make a case that a third such attack, not fatal but horrible, on a Hanukkah party at the rabbi's house next door to the synagogue took place last week, December 2019. And then note that virulently anti-Semitic traffic on the internet and on less public internet forums has increased dramatically over the past year and gotten steadily worse. That highly ranked public officials have slandered prominent Jews with anti-Semitic stereotyping. That Jewish students have been accused of dual loyalty and forced off of public boards. That all the weirdest, sickest, most vile and evil vilifications are being revived both online and in other public forums. And then, pay attention to the fact that this is happening not in Europe, where anti-Semitism is in the very soil of the continent, or around the Arab world, where hatred of Israel has turned every response to Jews into malicious public defamation. No, this is happening in the very country where we Jews experienced citizenship and freedom from the very first day of its existence, the land of the free and the home of the brave. So what's going on here? Pirkei Avot tells us, pray for the welfare of the government, for without it, people would eat each other alive. In the past couple of years, the balance and control that government is supposed to provide to our great nation has been upended.
attitudes and even policies of hatred and demonization have become standard issue. We have turned into a Twitter-oriented people, focused on the latest outrageous statement or accusation, a thrill-a-minute nation, unfiltered id exploding on our small screens. And we've become very, very angry about almost everything. My friends, whenever you release unfocused hatred in society as a motivation to control some issue or to serve your own political ends, you are unlikely to be able to control where it will be directed. Angry people are generally not rational people. They will act to destroy anything that gets in their way or happens to cross their path. Mobs do not act with balance or discretion. They act stupidly, out of ignorance and the selfishness that emotional disruption and hostility breed. I want to damage what I don't like. I don't care if it's reasonable or appropriate or decent or even rational to do so. Many years ago, back in 1976, the bicentennial of our country, the Paddy Chayefsky-written movie Network had Peter Finch's insane newsman character shout, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore." It became a rallying cry of the nation in the film. Chayefsky, he was Jewish, of course, was writing a satire. But today it feels more like he was writing prophecy. There is so much anger out there about politics, government, public life, at a time when things, frankly, are not so bad. And yet everyone on a soapbox or an Instagram feed or a Facebook screed or in the Twitterverse keeps shouting, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore." And this empowers those who are truly insane, and those who prefer crazy conspiracy theories to hard facts. And some of them, of course, take aim directly at Jews. After all, we've been a target for ignoramuses and those seeking scapegoats for well over 2,000 years. And one of the most vicious and longest-lived conspiracy theories of all pretends Jews are controlling the world. It is time to do something about serious anti-Semitism in America. It's a real-life problem now, not a matter of hate literature or scrawled swastikas or even toppled tombstones. It's a threat to some of our lives, to our peace of mind, to our freedom to be Jews. There are four things we can and should do. The first is build bridges to other communities. Reach out to smart, caring people of all denominations. Make alliances with people who will come to our aid in this time of trouble. Attend their services. Have them attend ours. Create relationships that endure, because a strong religious and civil society is the best defense against the free-floating insanity aloft in America today. The second thing we must do is fight against the disturbed elements trying to drive our nation into crisis. Work for and elect sane people, those who seek to protect the rights of all Americans to pray, believe, and be who they are. And do not descend into the miasma of anger and hatred yourself. We are facing a time of danger. The best responses will come when we are reasoning carefully and strategically, not shouting incoherently. And sadly, the third thing we must do is make certain that we are protecting our people, all of our people, as well as we possibly can. That means having serious security at all Jewish institutions in America, as it exists already all over the rest of the world. It means training people in how to respond to acts of insanity, how to defend ourselves. It means funding security as a priority. Finally, we must resist any form of anti-Semitism, whether it comes from the right or the left. That means that if people you otherwise agree with politically are using anti-Semitic tropes or attacking Jews, you must be willing to stand up to them, because you have a far greater chance to change the mind of someone you know and work with than you do of someone far off on the other side of the political divide. That's four ways to combat and defeat anti-Semitism. Build bridges, seek sanity, protect people, and argue against. Build bridges, seek sanity, protect people, argue against. That's how we make 2020 a better year than 2019 was for Jews in America.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol.
The best games in town, amazing dining, and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the Soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Jeremy Ben-Ami, the president of J Street, the important and somewhat controversial pro-Israel organization on the center-left of American politics. Our playout this morning is a song for the new year from cantor David Dudu Fischer, the great Israeli chazan, recording star, and musical theater icon. It's called Shana Tova, a good year of peace and contentment. We could all use that, no? My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good first full week of 2020, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Shana Tova, Shana Tova. Yamim holchim, yamim baim, silchi gam at lachataim, rab icholim, simchi noflim, bechesedu verachamim.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.